Hey bosses, before we get started with this episode, I want to thank our sponsor, DiversityFund.com. We'll tell you more in the mid-roll, but they allow you to invest like the 1%.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny, and I am in Weligama, Sri Lanka. And Sam, are you out in Barcelona?
In Barcelona. Where is Weligama?
It's a little surf town here in Sri Lanka, which is it's kind of like the better Bali that nobody goes to for some reason.
How are the mosquitoes? That's always top of my mind.
Pretty much the same as Thailand or anywhere else. It doesn't affect me. I always carry around a little spray bottle of mosquito spray, but I normally don't even have to use it.
Great. Well, I hope you're getting your surf reps in. I'd like to see who's a better surfer between you and I. I've only surfed one wave in my life, but I'm keen to get back on that board and learn how to hang 10.
Well, come out anytime, man.
Good cool. Stuff. Well, I'm excited for this episode you lined up, Johnny.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And we just got done with our first ever Patreon Q&A, live Q&A call. So big shout out to everyone who was on that. And if you guys haven't seen our Patreon page yet, just go to investlikeaboss.com. And on the top right, you can click become Patreon. You can get a bunch of perks like hopping on a live call with Sam and I.
Yeah, that was super fun. I enjoyed that. Looking forward to doing that each month. And check out the Patreon group if you haven't yet. We're dropping in a lot of the strategies, real-time trades, and cool projects like the renovation that I'm doing in Barcelona right now.
Yeah, so in there, Sam and I both have uploaded screenshots of all of our investments with actual dollar figures as well. We answered a lot of kind of more personal questions in there that we don't really want to be too public, but... In there, we're like, it's only, 26 people, so it's fine. And we told people, like, hey, like, if you guys want to share anything super personal, it's a small group of really, like, really invested individuals. And not just financially, most people are just putting, giving $5 or $10 a month. But these are people who have listened to a lot of the episodes. Some of them, probably most of them have, I've heard, 50 plus to 100 Invest Like a Boss episodes, so that's why they're part of it.
Yeah, and remember, guys, that this money is going directly to support the production of Invest Like a Boss and more content. And we're currently looking for an admin assistant, a virtual assistant, whatever you want to call it, come on and help us to produce more episodes and especially help with scheduling. We talked about that in the call last night as well. So if you know anyone that's up for it or you're interested in helping us out here at Invest Like a Boss, go ahead and write us at media@investlikeaboss.com.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And we are halfway there to VA. I think we are at $226 a month or something, which doesn't sound like a lot, but but I think having that amount pledged every month and knowing that that's going to come through and only going to grow, hopefully, that's going to help us hire a VA and really, continue building up the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're already back on track with episodes, as most of you have witnessed going into the end of last year and beginning of this year. We're kind of in the 1 to 2 episodes a month, but we already have 4 lined up for February. So with your guys' help, we'll be able to keep that pace going all through 2020.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. So shout outs to all the new Patreon subscribers and pledgers, I guess patrons for the month. Michael Peters, Nikolai Kolev, Jerry Mills, Jordan Harris, Tamala Hutcherson, Doran Tran, Matt McGabe, James Borghese, Jordan Harris. Are these double pledges? I don't know. I think I'm repeating some of them, but big thanks to all of you and to everyone who jumped on the call yesterday. It was fun talking to Vikram and Nana and Jonathan. Who else was on there last night? It was a good fun call. And Matt as well.
Good fun call. Well, let's get into this episode. Yeah, let's get into this episode, Kingmakers. Johnny, I think you wanted to get Kingmakers on because you're going through this process right now, buying versus building.
Yeah. So actually, this all got inspired from the Ace Chapman episode. If you guys haven't heard that one, it was really, really good. It was episode 132, titled Buying a Business Versus Starting a New One with Ace Chapman. And his strategy is basically co-investing with investors to buy online businesses. And while, you know, I got really excited, I started kind of freeing up some cash and started looking at some of the deals. And we'll go into some of the more of this in detail about what I'm actually going to invest in or not in the outro. But that's kind of what inspired me to look into the acquisition space more. Because instead of just growing, you know, our income by 7% or maybe 10%, when you acquire a business, you can potentially, you know, cash flow 10% or more straight away and then be able to grow the business and sell it for, you know, for double, triple, or 4x what you put in.
Yes, indeed. And more and more and more people are starting to think about buying versus building. And on this episode, Johnny, I know you're going to get into how to finance some of these deals, of course, what the returns are, get into some of the high level views of what the numbers can be. And I was just up in London. We can talk more about this in the outro as well. I was just up in London meeting with a private equity company. And I'm just like, wow, I just love everything you do about your model. You buy something that works, you use leverage, and you try to get 3x your return in 3 to 5 years. And it's somewhat safe. You have sort of a safety net versus this startup mentality where 80, 90% of everyone that we watch do a startup fails. And I think this is the time in life where we need to be thinking about buying versus building. Just like Ace said, if you're going to buy a house or get a house or a car, you don't build it, you buy it. But when it comes to businesses, so many people think you need to build it instead of buy it. And we're starting to learn kind of the other side of that.
Yeah, 100%. I think this is the evolution. I think in the beginning, when we don't have much money to invest or to put into a business, that's, you know, when we bootstrap it. And same with investments, you know, we can just bootstrap in $50 a month, $100 a month, $200 a month until we slowly build up a nest egg. But being able to just buy a business is the ultimate kind of way to kind of skip levels. And this has been really, really popular in, you know, throughout 2019. And I think in 2020, I'm going to predict this is going to be the hot new topic. Actually, did you know that Tai Lopez just announced that he bought Dress Barn out of all things?
No. What's Dress Barn?
Oh, you must have seen it. They were all over California when I was a kid growing up. It was like a women's fashion label, almost like JCPenney or Ross or Burlington Coat Factory. And they had, you know, kind of went downhill in the last 10 or 20 years. Now I think it's online only, but I think they still do like $60 million in revenue a year, something huge. And Tai Lopez, you know, internet marketing, you know, madman, you know, whether you like him or not, he bought this business and it's a really substantial company. So it kind of just shows that it's a hot topic.
That's great. And I think everyone will learn on this episode too, that you might not need as much money as you think to put down to be able to acquire one of these businesses. So Johnny, should we get into it?
Yeah. So we have on Kailan Ginger from Kingmakers. He's the president and he started multiple businesses before hopping on the Kingmakers team along with the two co-founders, Devin Sawney and Hayden Miyamoto. So I'm excited. Let's have them on right now. Hey, bosses. Welcome back to the show. We have on Kailan Ginger. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Johnny. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, really, really excited to have you and Kingmakers on because I've heard actually a lot of really good things about your company. And I think the acquisition space, kind of investing into businesses, has been the hot topic for, you know, 2020 so far. So really excited to talk to you.
Yeah, man, we're excited to be in this space. You know, what we're doing, we kind of look to the right and to the left, and we don't see a lot of people doing the same thing. I'm sure it's only a matter of time, but, you know, we've taken years of experience in kind of the small cap M&A space and turned that into quite a neat business model that, you know, I'm excited to share with you.
Yeah, so you're the president, and then there's two co-founders as well, Hayden Miyamoto and Devin Sawney. How did you guys all get involved? How did Kingmakers actually start?
Yeah, man, Hayden and Devin, like, fantastic people. It would love to have you have them on at some point. Really, really knowledgeable. I view them as my mentors. You know, we all met through Wired Investors. So, you know, people can Google Wired Investors. This was a private equity firm that we launched back in 2015. Hayden and Devin were, again, the co-founders of that. So we bought over, you know, a dozen online businesses in a pretty short period of time. So Wired Investors grew quite fast. I personally came in contact with them. I had a podcast called Successful Dropout where I interviewed, you know, college and high school dropouts. I'm a college dropout myself. Hayden's a high school dropout. He was the very first person I ever had on the show. And we just hit it off, man. A year and a half later, he called me up to come be the CEO of one of their portfolio companies. And then Wired Investors essentially morphed, you know, it's a long story, but morphed into Kingmakers. And so I became part of the founding team of Kingmakers.
Okay, cool. And what were like the type of these businesses that you guys were acquiring?
Sure. Yeah. So these were primarily online businesses. They were, you know, online publishers, SaaS companies. Mostly publishers and SaaS. Doing anywhere between, you know, 250K and, you know, $1 million per year in EBITDA. You know, the multiples back then, there wasn't, you know, a whole lot of demand when we started. We were kind of, you know, some of the first to start really rolling these assets up. And so, you know, multiples were a little bit better than they are now, you know, 2 to 2.5 times the yearly EBITDA. And, you know, we had, you know, one of our superpowers has always been digital marketing. And so, and also systems and kind of process creation and training. And so what we had was, you know, essentially an internship where we would, it was called the ranking formula. Some people listening may even remember it, where we would essentially train general managers for these websites that we would acquire. And we train them on, you know, the systems and processes on how to kind of grow and rank these websites the way we liked to do it. And so we had this neat kind of model where, you know, this pipeline of really well-trained managers for these websites, and then we would acquire these websites and basically, you know, invest a lot of time and money to grow them and then essentially just cash flow.
Okay, definitely makes sense. And let's kind of define some terms for people in case they're not too familiar with the acquisition model. So first, when you say content sites or publishing sites, are they, you know, are they like blogs, you know, about, you know, like home recipes? Yeah. Or are they like what are the kind of some examples?
Yeah, I mean, all the above, like, so publishers. So we own like a portfolio of pet sites, right? So if you Google right now, like best dog food for my golden retriever, chances are, you know, the top five results on Google are going to be some blog posts about the best dog food, right? So you'll click on one of those and you'll read a review by somebody. Oh, you know, I got this dog food. It was like super great for my dog. It like helped their fur. You know, they loved it, whatever. And, you know, what's going to happen is you are probably going to want to buy that for your dog. And so you're going to click a link that they have, which might take you to Amazon, for instance, to order that dog food, right? And that's an affiliate link. And so, you know, these sites, although they look, you know, they don't look, they look maybe unassuming, you know, these can be massive, massive businesses that are getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of people visiting them per month. And, you know, they monetize through what I just described, which is an affiliate link. And so, you know, if you're the website owner and, you know, somebody, you know, clicks through your blog post to buy a dog food that you recommended, you're going to get, you know, maybe a $10 or $30 or maybe $100 kind of kickback from Amazon or the seller on Amazon for that. And so you imagine with hundreds of thousands of people hitting these, you know, publishing sites talking about everything from, it could be dogs, it could be, you know, floor installation and cleaning, like you name it, several thousand of them are clicking through affiliate links and you're getting commissions for all those. And then there's advertising as well. So you throw ads up on the site. And so these sites can start earning very, very quickly, you know, 10, 20, 30, up to, you know, $100,000 plus per month. So, you know,
wow. They're
unassuming, but they can be quite massive businesses, right?
Yeah. And I think we've all seen these sites when we're, you know, just Googling random, you know, random things, you know, whether it's, you know, best paleo dog food, you know, and, you know, and we see these sites and sometimes, you know, we kind of just quickly read through them. Sometimes, you know, we're like, oh, this is actually good content. But either way, we end up clicking the Amazon link and that kind of cookies us. So if we do end up buying some dog food from Amazon, that publisher or that blog owner is going to get that commission.
Exactly. So what we got essentially really, really good at was finding these sites, you know, talking to the owners, negotiating them down to, you know, great terms and purchasing them and then adding a lot of value and kind of growing the website. And also, you know, just, you know, the very act of analyzing these websites. You know, how do you know if this is going to be a good acquisition or a bad one? And so we just got very good at systematizing the whole process from finding it to analyzing it to, you know, closing on it and then growing it, you know, post-acquisition. You know, we still have some of them. We're cash flowing. We've exited, you know, several. And now we've actually moved to focus on, you know, actually purely brick and mortar businesses. Which has been interesting. That's been kind of a recent development. Yeah.
So I definitely want to talk about that and why you guys moved. But first, let's talk a little bit about, like, how do you know it's a good deal? Like, when you guys are looking, what are some things that you look for to know this site has potential?
You know, so just talking, you know, we could go on for hours about just the subject of diligence business, right? But, you know, maybe touching on some of the basics, like one of the things we're looking for. So when you look at a website, right, all it really is a combination of one or more traffic sources, you know, people coming to the website, and then a combination of one or more monetization methods. You know, this is how you're actually making money from people. And so, you know, these are the things that we're analyzing. So when we analyze, and keep in mind, you know, traffic sources are much, much harder to recreate. You know, for some websites that takes years to kind of build up very strong traffic to the website and organic traffic, you know, through Google, which is, you know, pretty valuable. Monetization methods, you know, are a little bit quicker. You know, if you lose like an affiliate partnership, you could probably, you know, with like a dog food company, you can probably go out and find another one within a week, right? Versus if you lose like, you know, 30-50% of your traffic, it could take you months to kind of build back up to that. So, you know, some of the things we're looking for are like just diversification in traffic, right? Like, is what we don't want to see is like 90% of the traffic to a website hitting one or two landing pages, right? Because it means if those landing pages stop ranking on Google for whatever reason, you've lost like a decent portion of your traffic, right? Want to see the majority of your traffic diversified across a couple dozen landing pages, right? So there's not like one single point of failure. You know, similar even just with monetization, right? We've turned down deals because, you know, during diligence, we find out they're earning 90% of their revenue through one like advertising partner or one like affiliate partner, right? And if something happened there, the relationship blew up, which there's a chance in the if you buy the previous owner out and they leave, maybe they had a special relationship there, then you've lost a bunch of your revenue. So you know, those are just some kind of basic things we're looking for. You know, we're also looking at other factors. You know, we're analyzing the content and the backlinks, like have they been doing anything shady to rank in Google that we might get penalized for, right? Google is king these days, and you know, websites kind of live and die based off of their algorithm changes. So we want to make sure we have a whole checklist of things to make sure you know, these websites aren't violating any kind of terms and conditions that could come back and bite us later. So that's a few kind of basic examples.
That definitely makes sense. And a bit earlier, you had mentioned that you would buy some of these sites, you know, back then for like 2.5 times. Was it, would, like, you used the term, was it yearly profit, or, and how's that changed?
Yearly EBIT, so it's earnings before interest, taxation, appreciation, why am I blanking? Interest before earnings, taxation, interest, depreciation, and amortization.
Okay, so actually what's coming in, like what's hitting that person's paycheck and not?
Essentially it's profit. Right. It's the best word, other word for it is profit. Yeah. It's somebody's paycheck.
Okay, easy. And you said that like a few years ago when you guys were getting started, that multiple was a lot lower. It was, you know, 2.5, you know, 2 to 2.5 years, which is 24 months to, you know, 36 or to 30 months of as a multiple. And have you seen that go up in recent years?
Yeah, for sure, right? Because there's more demand, and website owners are, you know, starting to, you know, expect more for their website. So, you know, nowadays, like we would be happy to see something at 3x, you know, probably go up to 4x is where kind of a lot of people start, and you know, depending on the business, like it might be quality enough to pay that, but in general, yeah, just. Demand has gone up, and so with that, kind of the price has gone up, which again is sort of, you know, it's one small reason among, you know, many other bigger reasons why we've kind of made the pivot to focusing on brick and mortar.
yeah, that definitely makes sense. And I guess the second part of this was you know, after you've done the due diligence to make sure it's a good functioning site, what do you guys do after you buy the site to grow it or make it worth more? Or are you just holding it for cash flow?
No, we definitely do quite a bit of work to it. So, you know, the way that, you know, so in the last, you know, few months, we've closed on, you know, two websites with buying partners, and we're closing on another one here next week, actually. Two of them are publisher sites. One is kind of the blogs we were talking about. One is a lead generation site. So kind of the electric utility space, it's a site where people kind of compare electric rates, and basically the site gets paid for passing on leads to kind of electric companies. So again, it's like the stuff you'd never think of, but these are like, right, you know, massive businesses. So in these cases, what we do is, you know, as part of our diligence before we buy the business, we put together, you know, pretty extensive growth plans. Mm-hmm. And we come up with a budget for those growth plans. And the type of things those growth plans, you know, include is, if we're talking about a publisher business, what matters there, right? To kind of rank in Google. And ranking in Google means you get more traffic, which means you make more money. And what matters there? So that's, you know, content. And so we have kind of captive agencies we've built now because we've been doing this so long, you know, 20 plus acquisitions, you know, to 10 million plus, you know, deployed. We built these agencies that kind of do things the way we like them done and kind of work exclusively for us. So we have, you know, people that write content, people that, you know, do backlinks, people that, you know, manage the website. And so including this growth plan is like, okay, you know, we do all this keyword research, and, you know, here are, you know, several hundred articles that we're going to write in the first 3 months post-acquisition. And, you know, that can get expensive. And so there's a budget for that. Part of that can come from the cash flow of the business. A lot of that can actually come from working capital that we get. And so, you know, we acquire these businesses with government-backed loans, which are called SBA loans. So the U.S. here has it's called Small Business Administration. It's great loans with great terms. You know, you're looking at like 85 to 90% kind of LTVs. Basically, you know, they'll loan you 90% of the value of the deal. So you're only putting down like 10 to, you know, maximum 20% and like 6% interest over like, over 10 years. And so the leverage can be very, very effective in that, you know, you could essentially buy $1 million business, or a business valued at $1 million, for $100,000, you know, cash out of pocket. You know, they'll also, they're really great with working capital. So they'll actually give you capital, they'll write you a check that's amortized in with the rest of the loan. They'll write you a check at closing that you can use for growth as well. So that goes towards our budget. So that'll pay for content. It'll pay for, our backlink strategy. It'll pay for, you know, a lot of times. So like the publisher we're acquiring next week, you know, two major growth opportunities is it'll private label its own products and sell them on Amazon. Right, so we have a whole budget and you know, an agency poised to basically create products under this website's name and put them on Amazon, and that's going to be a whole nother kind of revenue stream. And you know, that alone is kind of fascinating how that kind of works with a publisher. Be happy to go into that more if you want. The other thing is like this particular website doesn't have an email list, right? So major growth opportunity. For us to build an email list and do proper kind of email marketing, and we can probably see a 20-30% bump in revenue just from that, right? So all this ends up in the growth plan. We have agencies that execute on it, and there's a budget, you know, for it that's taken care of through the business's cash flow and or working capital that we get through the financing to acquire the business.
Okay, definitely makes sense. And like, what are the actual deal terms? Like, so when I know things have kind of changed now that you guys are moving into brick and mortar, but can you give us some kind of example of, as an investor, like, how does that work?
Yeah. These are high level numbers, right? There's other kind of smaller costs and little nuances that, you know, we don't have time to go into, but high level, like, you know, this is like a pretty realistic deal structure, right? So So again, if we're using kind of debt like SBA debt or another type of like debt financing with similar terms, right? So this is, you know, 80 to 90% leverage, you know, 5 to 7% interest over, you know, like a 10-year plus amortization. If we're kind of working with those terms, you know, let's look at high-level numbers on a business doing $600,000 per year in profit, right? Mm-hmm. So $600,000 per year in profit. Let's say the purchase price is a 2.5 multiple of that profit, right? So that puts you at a $1.5 million purchase price for that business. That's really good. Again, that the 2.5, I think would be harder to find with like a website, certainly harder to find with like a SaaS company right now. If you're looking at kind of a brick and mortar business, totally doable. So 1.5 million purchase price. If you're getting a 90% leverage with an SBA loan, that means SBA is loaning you $1,350,000, right? And so that leaves $150,000 that you need to put down as a cash down payment, or 10%, right? So the math gets kind of stupid, right? Because you're putting down $150,000 to buy a $1.5 million business, and what that actually translates to in cash flow is, you know, let's start with let's start with the top. So your total cash flow at $600,000 a year is, that's $50,000 per month. You know, post acquisition, your interest and principal payments on that loan, and again, this is at 6% over 10 years, are going to be just under $15,000 per month, but we'll call it $15,000, so we have round numbers. So that means your net cash flow is still $35,000, which means, you know, per month, which means you get that $150,000 of cash back in your pocket in under a year, in like 5 months, right? Or like another way to think about it is we're talking about 280% cash on cash returns, right? So the math just gets, you know, really stupid when you're you buying these businesses with this type of leverage, right? And you know, again, this is specifically SBA, and kind of the bummer about SBA is, since it's government backed, you have to be a U.S. citizen to qualify. You know, they're also obviously looking for, you know, a good credit score. Relevant experience to the business you're buying is it gets really important if you're buying anything over like 2.5 million, but below that, you know, if you have some business management experience and, you know, you've got some entrepreneurial experience, you're probably fine. And then, of course, you know, you're going to want $150,000 to $200,000 in kind of liquid cash to be able to put down on one of these deals. I'm sure there's other kind of debt financing out there with similar terms. We're, you know, right now not super focused on it. We're really focused on SBA.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense, because if you can grow the business's profit or cash flow, or, you know, by even $1,000 a month, that's an extra $30,000 in the sale price. So, yep. You know, if you can grow by $10,000 a month, you know, you have an extra $300,000 coming in, and not only can you, you know, you pay off the loan, but then you have a lot left over. So it definitely makes sense. And I think that's kind of why I wanted to have you guys on, because you have a very different model than some of the other acquisition space people out there that we've had on the show already, like Ace, mm-hmm. who, you know, they just do cash deals.
Hey bosses, this week's sponsor is Diversity Fund, an alternative investment platform providing the same investment opportunities as the wealthy. Their goal is to help close the wealth gap and enable all Americans to achieve financial freedom by opening up the world of alternative investments and let you invest and build wealth like the 1%. Their current investing offering is the DF Growth REIT, a portfolio of commercial real estate focusing on value-add multifamily apartment buildings. What makes Diversity Fund different is that they are vertically integrated, which means that they own and operate all the assets. That allows them to remove the middlemen, not charge any platform or asset management fees. Best of all, they're invested alongside with you, so you know their interests are aligned with yours. Even then, they pay their investors before they pay themselves. Go to diversityfund.com to learn more or get started for as low as $500. Use promo code BOSS20 to get a $20 Amazon gift card after making your first investment.
That's DiverSyFund.com.
So we used to buy these businesses, you know, all just ourselves, right? And that was more Kingmaker, or sorry, that was Wired Investors, really, was that model. You know, the Kingmakers model is we actually buy this with like people who are probably listening right now. So we work with partner buyers to buy these businesses. And when we buy the business with you, you own the majority of the business, you know, usually around 70%, and we purchase a minority kind of 30% stake in it.
Like how do these deals work? So like if me as an investor, I'll put in 70%. So let's say I put in, you know, $70,000. Let's just say, yeah, $70,000 to make it easy. And then do you guys put in the other $30,000 then?
Yeah, essentially we invest at the same term. So let me just high level, you know, start for people from the, like, there's a lot to this, but again, I'll go high level and kind of walk people through how we would actually work with a buyer. And let me just preemptively, like, people ask, okay, why are you buying businesses with other people and like helping people buy businesses instead of just continuing to buy them yourself if this is so great? And like, to just like preemptively answer that question, because right, it's sort of like, why is the guru teaching? Like, the guru's only teaching because they can't make any money themselves, sort of thing. And so, you know, like with Wired, it went really, really well. One of the main challenges that we ran into is, like I said, we were training and hiring these general managers to run kind of the day-to-day operations of these businesses. And they would follow procedures to do this that we had set up. And, you know, that worked okay. But at the end of the day, you know, these individuals weren't actually invested, like financially invested in the deal. And when you don't have skin in the game, you're not like thinking of growth strategies in the shower. You're not really giving it your all to think about, you know, what are the different ways I can grow this business? You know, keeping your ear to the ground for industry trends you can take advantage of, and, you know, being thinking like a CEO, honestly, and kind of living 6 months in the future and really, really optimizing and growing these companies. And, you know, we were doing it, you know, with the first few, but once you start, you know, have a larger portfolio of like a dozen plus, that gets very difficult. And so we want to be doing this for years, buying these types of these small cap businesses. And so we were thinking, you know, how do we scale this model? We should really be working with majority owner operators, people that, you know, have the majority of the skin in the game. They've put up most of the capital. They own the majority of the business and they're operating the day to day. And what we can do is continue to deploy capital in a minority position in these businesses and then do what we do best, which is it's systems and training. Essentially, we've been doing this a long time, and so we have created systems and training and tools and resources and a whole Rolodex of people to get you from point A to point B, which point A is being like searching for the right business, you know, doing it all the way to actually growing the business and exiting it like years in the future, right? So everything in between there is what we help with. And so, you know, how we work with somebody is say a, and we work with like 10 partners, anywhere from to 10 to 12 partners at any one time to do this. So if you want to buy like a seven-figure business, you approach us. We have a whole system. We call it our partnership gauntlet, which is essentially a couple of weeks of training and an in-person meetup, some scheduled weekly calls to kind of train you in some of our systems for, you know, actually analyzing these businesses. It also lets us just vet people really well. When you're going to be buying a business with somebody, you want to think the same way. You want to make sure and have shared values. And we want to work with people that want to build portfolios of these businesses. So we're going to, when you're working with a business partner, you want to make sure you work well together. And we want to work with people for, you know, the next decade, right? So we have this partnership gauntlet. We put people through, people that make it to the other side and feel comfortable moving forward with us, and we feel comfortable moving forward with them, we basically start searching for a business. When we find one that we want to sink our teeth into, we have a whole, you know, it's like 500 plus kind of diligence checklist, and we have a whole team of VAs and that work through systems and processes to kind of analyze the business, you know, with you being involved as well with us in that. So, you know, we have pre-LOI diligence. You know, if the kind of the business passes those checks, then we have we put in an LOI on the business. Then we do post-LOI diligence, which is, you know, really, really in-depth, you know, operational diligence, financial diligence. We're doing a massive kind of quality of earnings report, tying It's pages and pages long. It's like basically forensic accounting, tying, invoices going back as far as the business has been, cash flowing, tying those invoices to, deposits in the bank account and tying that to the P&L the seller's given us to make sure everything checks out and there's no discrepancies. We've gotten extremely good at analyzing these businesses to make sure they're great to buy.
That definitely makes sense. The process I can imagine is very sensitive of just even analyzing and then acquiring the businesses. I'm curious now, why did you guys switch from buying primarily or online businesses now to offline businesses?
Several different reasons. One was deal flow. Since we're working with a bunch of buyers, that means we need to find a bunch of great deals. And like I'd mentioned earlier, there's buying websites has just become a lot more frothy. There's just a lot more people looking for websites. And so, we had a pretty robust sourcing system that we built from the ground up. It was really proprietary. And even then, we were probably seeing, maybe one deal per week that we really wanted to sink our teeth into if we were lucky. And most of those, didn't pan out once they got further down into the diligence pipeline. And so, part of it is deal flow. If we look at, brick and mortar businesses, we're seeing more like 10 to 15. And, why that is because, just in the U.S. alone, and Forbes has put out an article on this. It's, other kind of big reputable news sources have talked about this. There's around 4.5 million businesses that are owned. The majority of them are owned by baby boomers. That over the next 10 years will need to switch hands as baby boomers retiring. They're retiring at like a rate of $9,000 to $10,000 per day, and so it represents like $10 trillion worth of small businesses that need to switch hands in like the next decade.
And I was gonna say most people's kids are not taking the business like they used to.
Exactly right. And only like 10 to 20% of these businesses listed. Will sell. And so it's just due to a lack of buyers. And what are these businesses, right? These are kind of the unsexy businesses that, when you're driving down the street, you just don't really pay attention to. Like for instance, in the home services niche, these are like HVAC companies, plumbing companies, electrician companies, tree trimming companies, garage door installation, like property management, right? They're these businesses that you don't pay a lot of attention to, but they're doing, this person is 65 years old. They want to retire. They've built, started the business, three decades ago, and it's earning like $1 million a year, and they'll sell it to you for $2 million. That is not an anomaly. And so again, very, very, very low demand and extremely high supply means these businesses are like super affordable. And they're also like severely under optimized. They have been kind of doing things the same way for several years. The owner's earning $1 million a year. So like why fix what doesn't seem to be broken? Now they want to retire, but it leaves a ton of low hanging fruit for us.
One of my favorite TV shows is The Prophet with Marcus Lomas. And it just, really highlights how many businesses in the U.S. are these kind of unassuming businesses that are, at least doing $1 million in revenue a year, and, maybe some of them aren't as profitable as they should be because they're just not using even basic, techniques that we would all use for our websites. Maybe they don't have reviews up, maybe they don't have an email list, maybe they're not doing any outside marketing. And it sounds like you guys are going to take the skills that you've learned in the cutthroat industry of online, where there's unlimited competition, and just use those skills for an offline business that has a very little competition. That definitely makes sense. And I like that you guys physically put your own money in as well. And that way, as an investor, mm-hmm. we really feel like you guys are invested as well, because you have, your money in the business as well. And you're not just taking a fee.
Yep, exactly.
So let's kind of walk through an example. So let's say, I'm from San Francisco, I have some experience with some websites, but I've never actually owned or operated a physical business. But, I have $100,000 saved up, want to buy a $1 million business, with you guys. Like, how does that kind of work? Do we have to find a business that's in San Francisco, kind of where I live, or can we look all around the US? You know, like how does this actually work?
We can definitely look all around the US. We'd prefer that people have quite a wide, like, the wider the radius you're willing to look in, the better, because it just means we can look in more places and just, you know, we have access to more opportunity, right? So it just depends. Like, I would say minimum, like, if somebody's willing to drive, you know, kind of commute 5 hours, you know, to the business, like, that's great. If you live in kind of a, you know, major area, like on the east or west coast, like in, you know, LA or around New York or something, like, that gives us plenty to work with. You know, the partner we bought this HVAC company with in Phoenix, he lives in California. So it's like a 3 hour flight for him. And he's down there, you know, once a month, you know, flies down there for a week or two right now, because, you know, after we buy the business, there's quite a lot to do to it. And again, like, our job is providing you with the people and kind of tools and systems. You know, your job is the majority owner of the business. Like, we view it as your business. You're in charge of the operations. But, you know, we're kind of giving you the guidance to operate effectively. And you're working in tandem with the GM that we've hired with you. And so this particular partner, he's quite involved. We're doing a lot of upfront work to the business, but as the year goes on, you know, he's going to be able to extract himself more and more. And, you know, long term, what his life probably looks like is, you know, weekly structured phone calls with his general manager and kind of maybe some key personnel in the business, maybe helping make some decisions here and there throughout the week. And then maybe an actual site visit once a month or once a quarter, right? But the end result is he's going to have a business that's working for him instead of him working for the business.
Okay. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And when you say that you guys hire a GM, I'm assuming you guys are hiring a local GM that lives in Phoenix that can run the day-to-day.
Yeah, exactly. So, and these are, you know, very competent people, right? So this business is, you know, throwing off $1 million a year. And if now, of course, it's doing more because we've done, you know, again, the growth opportunities are just amazing. So this particular GM, like, he, you know, very highly qualified, you know, his last job was he was the number two person at our biggest competitor in the Phoenix Valley there. That's like 10x our size. They're doing like $100 million in revenue per year. Right. So, you know, we're paying him, you know, six figures. The business can afford that. But, you know, super highly competent individual that's kind of been there and done that, and he's the one who's kind of boots on the ground running the day to day. And again, that's not an anomaly. When you're looking for like competent managers to manage websites, you know, we literally had to build a training system and funnel to like train people properly to run websites. Like that is a much smaller talent pool, and the people that really do know what they're doing are much less likely to work for you.
During that kind of first month, you know, during the handover and training, is somebody from Kingsmakers, you know, actually in Phoenix, like at the physical store, or are you guys doing everything virtually?
No, so yeah, so we do everything virtually. Again, like we're not an operations company, so we're not doing any of the actual like operations in the business, which means we don't have to physically be there, and so that's why, you know, we are looking for partners who are financially in a position to where they can, you know, spend probably 50-60% of their time up front after we buy these businesses, working kind of on the business, you know, implementing systems and process and kind of optimizing things with our training, and then alongside their general manager, right? But what we provide is kind of a, you know, I would say, you know, it's kind of a repository of training and systems for like all the work zones that like together represent a company's operations. So these are things like, you know, goal settings, like how, you know, how do you set goals for the companies? How do you know if they're the right goals? How do you break those down into like actionable steps today? How do you break those down into actionable steps for like your GM and like all the key employees? You know, it's things like strategy and decision making. It's like, you know, meeting rhythms. It's project and task creation and, you know, prioritization, and then project and task, you know, quality assurance and, you know, learning and training for staff involved there. And, you know, we also have systems and training, you know, to create, you know, an operating plan for the business. a vision on basically how to grow and how to fireproof the business. You know, fireproof is a word we love to use because, you know, if you've owned any business for, you know, like a day, like, you know, there's this phrase, like, I just feel like I'm always putting out fires, right? And so, you know, these are one of the things we do is fireproof the business. I'd say there's like two types of fires that we want to prevent, right? There's like disastrous fires, which is, you know, things that could really take the business down in a short matter of time. So these are things like, you know, key man risk, if kind of a really, really key employee or you know, even the business owner themselves leaving, you know, mitigating against that. You know, if the business owner was doing a ton of things that you just are really hard to replicate, or maybe they had a special relationship with one of their biggest vendors or something, you know, basically eliminating single point of failure.
So you guys help find and hire, you know, like the GM, and then are you guys still doing, like, for example, let's say their, you know, their ads aren't optimized or their web presence isn't optimized, is that something that you guys will have someone on your team do while like, you know, me, yep, the kind of owner operator kind of deals with more of the day-to-day stuff?
Yeah, so again, the other kind of value that we bring to the table is I would say, you know, when we invest in your business, and so we own a minority share, you know, like 30% is what we typically take or purchase in your business. So we own 30% of your business. Again, the philosophy here is like, it's your business. You own the majority of it. At the end of the day, like, you call all the shots, who to hire, who to fire, you know, how to utilize cash flow, and you kind of can lean on us for helping you make those decisions. But when we own the business with you, we essentially become a part of your leadership team. And the way I like to think about it is like, we are your CFO in a box and your CMO in a box. So what this often means is, you know, the business is hiring third parties. The business is hiring, you know, a third party, you know, marketing agency that we bring to the table, third party financial agency that we bring to the table. Again, these are like captive agencies that we've been working with for years, do things the way we like them done. And, you know, their cost is quite a bit lower than, you know, probably 50% plus lower than anything else you'd find on the market, because, you know, they scale through kind of working through all, you know, our portfolio of businesses and partners, right?
Yeah, that sounds good. And it sounds like there's a lot of opportunity out there, especially in the brick and mortar kind of physical businesses space. If somebody wants to get involved and become an investor with you guys, what are the next steps?
Yeah, so the next step is to go through our partnership gauntlet. Like I said, you know, we're like very serious about, you know, vetting the people we partner with, and then you guys need to get to know us as well, right? But we will literally be business partners, and so it's very important we have shared values and we kind of think the same way about these businesses. So you can go to kingmakers.co /investlikeaboss to basically hit our landing page there. That will, you know, give you an option to sign up for the gauntlet. Before you do, you'll get on you know, a free call with one of our account managers, and they'll kind of walk you through a lot more in depth. You know, what I've already talked about here, we'll send you a bunch of materials too. And you know, if it's a good fit, we'll get you into the gauntlet and hopefully buy a business with you.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. And just in case anyone's listening to this, you know, kind of later down the road, kind of after summer 2020, you guys, mm-hmm, like, can you briefly talk about Acquire as well?
Yeah. So we are, it's kind of awkward because we are in the process of rebranding to Acquira. So it's like Acquire, but with an A on the end instead. So Acquira.com is where we'll be at. And so, you know, you can also just head there. You know, probably starting end of February 2020, if you're listening to this then, and onward, and that's where you'll find us as well.
Okay, awesome. So yeah, just in case you guys are listening to this, you know, not when it comes out, but a few months later, as I know a lot of you do, Kingmakers and Acquire, same company, same deal. And yeah, thank you so much for being on. It really answered a lot of the questions, and I think some people are going to be really excited about, you know, being able to own a $1 million business and be able to take some of the skills and dominate the offline space.
Yeah, Johnny, thanks for having me on, man. And yeah, happy to get in touch with anybody who's listening. But yeah, appreciate the time here.
All right.
So, Johnny, tell us, have you bought a business yet? We're waiting to hear.
So me and my buddy Ty just bought this dress company and a barn.
I could see you getting into one of these wedding, these retail wedding store chains. That's like, that's the next two decades of your life, Johnny.
Actually, I think what a really hot business would be is a wedding dress rental business in places a lot of Chinese tourists go. Because they love dressing up to take pictures all over Thailand and kind of just wherever else they are.
God, who was I just talking to? Was it in Chiang Mai that someone was like, "They will, that will kill it"? Yes. Talking to my old friend Fern, and her husband is a Dutch guy that does like suit and wedding stuff in the Netherlands. And he was like, "Man, this would kill it in Chiang Mai because Chinese are just like flying over, and then the Thais are also like just dropping all types of money on their super photogenic weddings."
Yeah, so that's a business, but no, I don't know. If you can tell, I think I had mentioned a little bit in the episode, but I think that the offline business that kind of model that Kingmakers does is really, really good for people who want to live in the US. But as you know, location independent as it possibly could be with hiring a manager or a GM, I'd want to be within a 30-minute drive. Like, I'd want my employees and my GM to know that I can just pop in whenever I want. And not, you know, I'm not going to have to schedule a time to show up. Because I don't think people are very that incentivized to do a good job unless it's a profit share model. If, you know, there's not someone kind of breathing down their back once in a while.
Yeah, and also knowing that they can just pop in at any time keeps them honest, right?
Yeah.
But this theme is something that we heard in the Ace Chapman show about the retail stuff. And there was kind of an assumption that we made after listening to the episode and actually going into it that, hey, maybe this is a really good time to be looking at offline businesses, because offline was our parents' generation, right? Like, my parents owned a little furniture store. I know your parents had a little restaurant, right, Johnny?
Yeah.
And our parents weren't doing internet stuff. So a lot of our parents and their peers have these offline businesses that a lot of millennials probably don't want to take over, right? Because millennials want that experience. They want flexibility. They want location independence to a large degree. And so what's going to happen with all these brick and mortar shops in the, you know, when everyone retires coming up? And I think there, and this is sort of included on this episode as well, that there's tremendous buying opportunities for people that are happy to be in a physical location and run a brick and mortar store. So proofs right there. Now it just depends on if we want to go out and buy sunbeds or not.
Yeah. So I definitely agree that the big play right now for investments is buying physical kind of brick and mortar businesses and that don't have a big online web presence, and just bringing that part of online marketing to it, because it's so much easier to, like, and here in Sri Lanka is a good example. There are so many hotels and guest houses that have either no or just terrible online web presence. Right now, like, we've been trying to rent a place for a month, and we walk around. There's no website. There's no email. You know, some of them might have a Facebook page, but they don't respond. You know, it takes a couple of days to respond. And then we'll ask them how much for a month, and they're just dumbfounded. Like, they have no idea. And they don't even know their own pricing. They're used to nightly rates, and they're kind of just, you know, just trying to get by. But if we took over one of these guest houses here in Sri Lanka, and we made a website, we put it all over Agoda and Booking on Airbnb, and we, you know, did packages for people to stay longer, it'd be super easy just to take over and have it be a very profitable business. And I think that opportunity lies, you know, not only in, you know, third world countries that are kind of developing, but even in the US, I'm sure there's a lot of places that just don't have a good online web presence.
Yeah, and we're exploring a lot of different ways to be able to find these businesses. So we had Kingmakers on this show. There's Empire Flippers we've had on. There's, of course, Ace Chapman. And there's a lot of other agencies that are helping scout for these companies. But I think the best way to get a really good deal, if you're willing to do your own due diligence, is just find something with your own eyes, strike up a conversation, and consider making an offer. Because a lot of these companies, business owners very rarely get an offer to sell their business, maybe once in a lifetime. And so a lot of these retail stores and a lot of online stores are never given an offer to sell a company. And so while some people are like, well, I wouldn't sell my company for X or Y, but when someone actually makes an offer, it becomes real. So there's a lot of good opportunities to be had in just making offers. And it's like in real estate, right? Like, a lot of people go around and they'll just offer 50 cents on the dollar for real estate. And if you make enough offers, like the Land Geek, right? This is what he's doing. He's making offers for like 20 cents on the dollar type of thing. You make enough offers, one of those is bound to come back.
Yeah.
To doing that, agree. You can find some really, really killer deals.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it's just timing, you know, especially with the business. If they're having a, you know, cash flow problem, or they're having a business relationship problem with one of the partners and they're fighting, you know, maybe it's a couple getting a divorce that's running a business, to be able to just step in there during their time of need, that's a golden opportunity. You know, I highly encourage everyone to watch a few episodes of The Profit by Marcus Lemus. I think that model of finding businesses that have a lot of revenue, so a lot of sales, but not a lot of profit because they're just not, you know, optimized very well. Going in, you know, you can buy the business for a high multiple, like 40x monthly profits, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, annual profit even, because the profit's so low. As long as the sales are high enough, you can go in, the purchase price still wouldn't be very high. But you can go in and you can just, you know, optimize it, make it actually more profitable, and you can make a killing, not only on the monthly cash flow, but whenever you want to sell it again.
And you know what I liked about this episode also, he was going into SBA loans. I haven't really thought or looked into SBA loans that much. It kept coming up at our iLab summit out in Los Angeles earlier or late last year. Do you know anyone that's taken an SBA loan yet to do any type of financing for these businesses?
So I think my buddy Chris, Kombucha Chris, took one out for his business.
I'd like to know more about that whole process because it seems pretty easy, but I've heard from other people just generally that it's not that easy. You have to sign a lot of – kind of sign your life away type of thing. And you got to remember, leverage cuts both ways. It's not it's not all kittens and roses, right? You got to be very careful, especially when you sign personally on something.
Exactly. And from what I've heard, that is the case where – 99% of the time, you basically sign your life away. And if the business fails or you can't pay it back, they come after your personal assets. And that is the reason why I'm going to have to pass, at least for now, on investing with Kingmakers. I think if I was in a position where, let's say I had exactly $150,000 or let's say $200,000 in net worth, it would actually make sense to be able to go in and buy a $1 million business with 20% down, put the rest as a personal guarantee through an SBA loan, and then be able to, you know, have that cash flow from a $1 million business, you know, to be able to grow it and maybe potentially sell it for 1.5 or 2 million. That would be a great play because it'd be high risk, high reward, or actually not even really that high risk, like medium risk, but super high reward, because I wouldn't have that much to lose. I would have that 200K to lose. However, in my position, if I was going to buy that same $1 million business and I put 200K down, but I'm personally liable for the remaining, if it doesn't go well, there's going to come after all my other assets and it just wouldn't be worth it.
Yeah, I agree, Johnny. And you know, you and I are both online guys. We've built digital businesses in the past. But with this model, I would actually feel way more comfortable doing it for a brick and mortar or some type of, you know, offline retail operation. I would never use leverage to buy an online business that is predicated on SEO or a couple of affiliate partnerships. There's just too many risks, too many things that you could overlook in due diligence, and too many ways that your revenue and profits could drop really, really quick.
Yeah, I definitely 100% agree. So I do think that this is an excellent deal for someone out there. If you think that you're that person, post on the Boss Lounge. We would love to hear it. You know, we'd love to kind of follow your journey with your deal making, and keep in touch on the Patreon. As soon as I find a deal that I actually want to invest in, I'll post it in there first. And everyone else, don't worry, we'll still have our quarterly updates to let you know what we invested in during those last few months. But as a Patreon, what's really cool is you get to know, like, straight away, pretty much instantly, anytime we either buy an asset or sell an asset or buy a deal. So big thanks again to all of our patrons. Investlikeaboss.com. Click on Patreon if you want to become one. And big thanks to this week's review of the week, Parker113. He says, "A diverse perspectives and great interviews, 5 stars. This is a great podcast. I'm an early stage investor and have gained so many ideas and motivation from listening to these episodes. I'm taking away tons of knowledge from each and really improving my overall understanding of investment options. I'm putting my favorite suggestions into practice and getting some skin in the game. And I'm grateful to be introduced to so many options that I never knew about before. Thanks, Parker. And thanks to our sponsor this week, Diversity Fund. Check them out. And Sam, I'll see you hopefully soon. So hasta luego.
Hasta luego from Barcelona. See you, bosses.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.